This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
Yo, you are in the right place at the right time, listening to the right thing. Tech Webcast. Congratulations on choosing such an awesome thing to listen to. You are clearly very smart. You're into tech stuff. You love hearing Brad and Jason and their guests chat. And you're probably really good looking too. Well done. So let's get into it. The weekly tech extravaganza that is Tech Webcast. In 3, 2, 1. Let's go!
Welcome to episode 243 of Tech Webcast Podcast, recorded on the 15th of June 2013. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday and rebroadcast on Aussie Tech Heads on Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Your hosts today are Brad, Jody, Steve, Jacob, and myself, Andrew. And our special guest today is Alan Furstenberg from Prisoner.com. G'day, Brad. How you doing, mate?
G'day, Andrew. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm doing good, thank you.
That's the way. We'll come back to you in about 2 seconds. Sure. Steve, what's up?
Oh, geez, just so many things. Of course, I was watching the Worldwide Developers Conference.
Yes, and, yes, we did. I was up at 2 a.m.
You want to see what the new, how big the new Mac Pro is?
Mate,
this is actually, I don't know if you're watching the video, this is actually about the size of the new Mac Pro right there.
Are you getting one, Steve? That is the question.
No. Mine's perfectly fine for 4 or 5 more years. I'm good.
He just showed up at Toro.
No, that's actually, I measured it out. It's like about 10 inches high and 6 inches in circumference. That's about the size of the new Mac Pro, believe it or not.
That's funny. That's very true.
I know it is. Same size, shape, everything.
That's crazy. Jacob Jones from the US, what's up, buddy?
Not much. What's up with you?
Not much, mate. Same old stuff. Podcast today. It's going to be fun. Jody, welcome back.
Hey, thank you for having me back, Brad. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. And you're here every week.
What's that?
I said you're here every week.
I am here every week. And guess what? I learned a new word this week.
Hey, what's that?
Derecho.
What does that mean?
Apparently, it is a windstorm, kind of like a tornado, but with straight-line winds. And we were under a derecho watch yesterday. Fortunately, it didn't evolve into a derecho, but interesting term, you know, if you haven't heard it or seen it before.
Well,
very kind of scary.
Well, I've learned a new word. It's called swell. That's so swell.
Cool.
We have Alan on. Hey, Alan.
Hey there.
How are you, mate? You're from the Dan Show, the Google Plus Week.
That's right. I do Google Plus Week every Friday and our Android Week every Monday.
Yep.
East Coast time.
Great shows. We'll come back to you in about 2 minutes. Andrew, you went to Brisbane.
Yeah, I did, actually, on Wednesday. I got the call to head up there when we were having lunch, in the middle of lunch. So
yeah,
a lot of fun. I managed to catch up with the Honourable Senator Stephen Conroy, who's the Minister, Federal Australian Minister for Communications. And we had a really good discussion for a couple hours in our boardroom in our Brisbane office. About what my startup, video startup, Zafo.com, and the National Broadband Network, what might be able to do together. So there's a few things there that, you know, watch this space and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, it was a really good time and just a sort of a day and a half, a couple of days of sort of busy meetings and things like that. And I got to catch up with my mother and father who both live in Brisbane, which was a lot of fun as well.
Yep, it's always good meeting Bev, which I haven't met yet, but I will be soon. What was it like meeting everyone there?
Yeah, it was really good. As I said, I actually caught up with a couple of people and they had probably half a dozen or so, you know, reporters and cameras and all sorts of things there. And so it was, it was really good. So quite enjoyed it. And it's great that we're hopefully going to start getting supported by some of the Australian government and so forth for the platform that we will become as we start to to mature as an organization. So and, yeah, it was really great.
What was his view? What was his view on Zafo?
Well, we gave him a demonstration of the what we're doing, and he really enjoyed it. And his first sort of impression was, "Wow, we didn't think something like this existed in our own backyard."
Okay.
He saw some of the things that we're trying to make better. Obviously, there's a lot that we need to do with Zafo around user interface, user experience. We're generating, creating apps at the moment, but he really liked what we're doing. And the big question he put to us was, "How can we keep you in Australia? How can we do it?" And I just said, "Look, support us. Help us. You know, we have a lot of competitors and people, particularly in the US, where we feel that they probably, they can rely a bit more heavily on some of the networks around them, and we just want that same, freedom and luxury in some ways." But it went really well, and it was a fantastic introduction to some quite high profile dignitaries within our federal government.
Yeah, that's very cool. Good on you, mate. Good on you. Very cool.
Oh, got a question for you.
Go ahead.
You think they're gonna give you some? How they're gonna give you support, like grants or
Yeah, look, that's a really good question. We put a grant in, which I think I can say public. We put a grant in about 8 months ago for innovation for what we're doing and a few other things, and we ended up being declined on that grant. So we've actually asked them to look at potentially revisiting that. So, I mean, yeah, you're right, Steve. As far as support is concerned, what we want is we would love to have a few grants, or at least even just get a mention now and then, get some visibility from some of our government-elected people, which I'm confident they're going to do. We had spent some really good time together, but realistically, it's about trying to access grants and funds and so forth. I mean, these monies are made available by our government for innovation, for technology, which ultimately helps the economy, because if we can create platform, create technology, that's more jobs, that's GDP, it's turnover. So it's just about accessing the money that's already there to try and do positive things.
Yep, sounds good. Now, Jody's got some news, so let's jump into that first.
Okay, interesting story about... this may seem a little creepy, but kind of like do-it-yourself brain stimulation.
Wow.
Apparently, there's studies that suggest that small doses of electricity can do things like increasing your memory, help you learn new tasks, make you better at math, turn you into a sniper in minutes, and also do crazy things like making ugly people seem attractive. But what's really kind of strange, if that's not strange enough, is that this one gentleman who fancied himself something of a musician, he didn't sing or play in perfect key. He strapped electrodes of a device made by his company, zapped his brain's auditory complex with a mild dose of electricity. Now he claims that he has a dramatic improvement in his ability to hear pitch, including the sour notes, and now he's practicing singing and he's more sensitive to it. Now, the thing that's kind of scary about this was not under the supervision of a doctor, not under the supervision of a psychologist, and he's not a doctor or a psychologist himself. He just kind of decided that it would be a good thing to do to zap his own brain. And the scary thing is that they're seeing this as being something of a trend. So, what do you guys think? Are you going to start zapping?
This actually happened before, like in the 20s. Or even the 1800s, I think, they built these contraptions when, electricity came around and, same thing, apparatus, neon lights and all that. It didn't really do anything. Somebody said shock therapy. I think it's just, I don't know, not saying it's a scam, but.
I mean, what do you think,
Andrew?
Would you zap your brain?
I don't know if I would do this. I mean, I'm one of those people who wants to know that it's been, tested and gone through this whole process and everything. But the first thing that sort of wound into my mind was Back to the Future with Dr. Emmett Brown and putting that big sort of light thing on Marty's head there. And yeah, that's all a bit crazy. But I did see something about ugly people becoming potentially more desirable. So that could be good for me, Jody.
In the future, people strapping a device on their head
Wow.
Stimulation in different cortexes or...
That's all pretty crazy, isn't it? But, I mean, we're in a time where you can project things from your glass and walk around and watch treats, so twits straight off your... So, yeah, it's a crazy time that we're living in.
All right. Alan, you have a view on that story?
Not really. I mean, it's hardly surprising. People have experimented with altering their brains in one way or another for ages. So, you know, here's yet another way to try it out.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Jacob, you have a view on that story at all?
I would not do that because that would sound very stupid because you might hurt yourself and might lose control of something. You might not be able to talk or hear or sense anything.
Good answer. All right, Jade, next story.
Okay, well, you know that Apple introduced a bunch of products this week, and evidently there's been a lot of people who are not crazy about their icons. So Gizmodo has a story this week about how they're already fixing what they call their off iOS and app icons. I'm curious if you guys have seen them, and if you agree that they're ugly.
You're breaking up really bad, Jody.
Okay.
I think she said that...
Maybe Steve can explain the story. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's basically there's some things, of course, with the new iOS 7 that came out, they announced. It hasn't been released yet until later this year. And supposedly they made some big changes with the icons, more flatter.
Yep.
I don't know. They're more colorful, I guess.
People are saying it looks like Android.
I've heard some of that, too, yeah.
What about you,
Andrew? I've heard that, but even Android's not this bad in some of their cases.
Mm.
I think some of the issues here is that they kind of turn the designers loose without having a really consistent concept of how some of the gradients would work. So, for example, the new color gradient behind Safari is exactly opposite the color gradient behind Mail, for example. So they look really bizarre next to each other.
Yep, definitely, definitely. All right, Andrew, what's your view on iOS 7?
I guess what Alan just said, I don't know that they've actually done a full comparative of some of the colors and some of the gradients and the way that different colors complement other ones and balance. But in saying that, I really like that they are trying to make things a bit simpler. I mean, we're going from a time... from a user interface perspective where everything was glossy with nice bubbles and shades, we're going back to sort of really flat colors and becoming, you know, pushing the content as king again. But in saying that, iOS 7, it's only an early beta release, so there's still probably a number of things that will change as the final version sort of hits hits phones within the next few months. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they put it out there, and it wouldn't surprise me if there is a number of changes that are made based on some of the feedback, particularly being such a wholesale change that they've made in iOS 7 with the look and feel. So don't be surprised if there's a number of things that are yet to happen before we see the first versions automatically pushed to people's phones.
Yep, good answer. Jody, would you have a view on that?
Jody? I'm curious to see, the fact that they introduced it and already people hate it is very unlike Apple, in my opinion. So I think Andrew had a good point that they kind of turned the developers loose.
Mm. All right, next story. Jody, if you can read it.
You forgot to ask me.
Sorry, Jacob. What's your view on that?
Yeah, I've tried out iOS 7.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they have a bug, but like what I was telling Jody, what about the, like if you have a deep skin, Griffin Survivor skin.
Yeah.
You can't really touch where the button to bring up the bottom part. You have to really dig in in order to press the button.
Do you know what he means, Andrew?
I do not know. I've got access, thanks to the lovely Jennifer, to install and do a few things for testing, but I haven't done that as yet, so I don't know the bug that he's talking about. But I have seen on a number of my streams that people are complaining that it's very, very buggy, even for an early release.
Mm. Yep, and that's why I wait for the final release. I don't download beta sort of stuff, you know. I just, you know, wait for it to come out and, yeah, All right, that's a good answer. Jacob, Jody, next story.
Well, there's several things that have been introduced in iOS 7, and unfortunately, we're not going to be able to run through all of them. And in fact, I don't even know what they all are, but some of them are pretty cool. Obviously, they've done a completely redesigned interface. There's a new lock screen. Mm-hmm. There's a new way where you can swipe between and multitask with the different icons. A cool photographic update with friends where you can stream with other people. There's more easier file sharing, local file sharing. The translucency, they call translucency and parallax, so you can see layers of information. I haven't seen it, so it sounds a little bit odd, but it might be interesting. The weather app has new interactive displays. Calendar has a new minimalist user interface. Multiple page support in folders. There's also a notification center that's now available on the lock screen. FaceTime, you can do audio calls if you wanted to.
Yay.
There's notification syncing. Phone and message blocking. Ooh, I like that one. The keychain sync is back. You can now search in Siri. And I think it's interesting that they introduced Siri. And I believe, if I'm not incorrect, that it's using Bing instead of Google. And I know that there's been a little bit of friction between Apple and Google now that they're both kind of in the hardware business. So I don't know what that's going to entail, and I'm curious to conjecture with you guys what you think that might mean for the future. But it's got a bunch of other features. We have an article in here. I'm just curious, for those of you who have been following it, what feature do you think is the coolest new feature? And do you think that this move to Bing may have deeper ramifications?
Me personally, I love the new feature, AirDrop. You don't need to use the app bump anymore. That's probably pretty cool. You have to use that app. AirDrop.
That is cool.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Bing is a good idea. I don't think it's strong enough as a search engine as yet. And it just goes to further show the political rifts between, you know, themselves and Google and so forth. And look, there's so much different in this. It's almost like Apple are starting to hear and buy into the hype that people are saying Apple are way behind. You know, Android is a better phone. It's a better operating system. And they've just gone and made a whole bunch of crazy changes to see which ones will actually stick. It might be too much too soon.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Steve, what do you think of the new iOS, and what's your favorite feature in it?
Well, just what Andrew was saying, I think, too, that the person who is, of course, in charge of iOS previously, Forrestal,
yep.
I think he was fired. He was actually fired over just the way he did iOS in general. That's what they brought in Ives. I forgot. I think it's Johnny Ives or something like
Jonathan
that.
Yeah, Jonathan Ivey.
So they brought him in to redo the interface. I think one of my favorite features is going to be I forgot what you call it. Where you can access all your most used different preferences, like turning on Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and all that. Because normally you got to dig in all the menus to activate it and turn on and off. So that's going to make it much more easier.
And also the new photo app or camera app is really good too. With photos, they've added some pretty cool
features. Sharing the pictures?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting too, because I know that there's been a lot of, especially here in New Jersey, I don't know if you guys have this in Australia or in the other states in the U.S., but there's been a lot of talk here in the U.S. in New Jersey about cell phone use while you're driving. And regardless of whether you're using a hands-free device, the fact that you're distracted, I know there have been studies now that are proving that it interferes with your ability to drive. So one of the features that they mentioned was that the iOS would be iOS in the car. And, you know, like my first instinct was like, wow, that's super cool. But then now with all of the information that's coming out about how dangerous it is, I'm wondering whether that's a good direction or a bad direction.
It's a good question. I mean, if people are going to do it, it's a difficult one. It's a really good point though, Jody, because, I mean, if people are going to use their phone in the car, surely we want to give them the safest possible method to do it, which would be what they're sort of trying to introduce. But in saying that, should we be doing anything at all for something where, as you sort of said, JD, we really just shouldn't be doing it full stop? I mean, in Australia, you're allowed to use your phone in the car as long as you're not holding it and it's on, you know, hands-free, which even for me, it makes no sense, because any time I'm on the phone, even, you know, on hands-free, you are distracted. So I use it very minimally, if at all.
Well, I think with everything, it's always a matter of degree. So, for example, when radios first started being put into cars in the 50s, there were a lot of studies showing just how much of a distraction radios were causing to drivers. I think anybody who has a child in the backseat of a car knows just how much distraction a four-year-old can do. But, you know, these days you're not going to drive without having a radio, and you're certainly not going to drive without having the child in your car if you need them there. So it's a matter of degree, and it's a matter of learning how to work with these things, and it's a matter of choosing appropriately. So, yes, you know, I don't think there's anybody who's going to say that doing voice command texting while driving isn't a distraction. Anybody who says that it's not a distraction is lying. On the other hand, it's probably less of a distraction than trying to type it out on your phone and look down and see the response. So, as with everything, it's a matter of degree and making the correct decisions.
All right. Good points, Alan. Good points.
Yeah, good points. I agree. Jacob, what's your view?
Well, I have something that could go with that a little bit. I think it's not safe, but if they wanted to, Apple could and make like a HUD display that you can attach to your dashboard that you, while you're driving, you could as easily not look at the phone, but it would be right in front of you. Like, you can hook it directly to your phone.
JD, what's your view on that?
I'm still here, Brad.
Yeah, JD, what's your view on that, what Jacob just said?
What, like a heads-up view?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Right now in New Jersey, they just introduced legislation to the state where the police officers would be able to grab your cell phone if you're in an accident and go through your cell phone to determine whether you were texting or on a call at the time of the accident. And there's a lot of controversy, obviously, about that. While I think that a heads-up display would be cool, it's still another distraction.
Yeah.
And unless they come up with a device where you get in the car and it kills the cell phone, so while you're driving, you just can't use your cell phone, I really don't know how they're going to stop people from using them. So I guess... that being said, I'd be in favor of anything that would make it safer, you know?
Mm. All right. Let's go to the next story, Jody. That's a good topic.
Okay. Well, you know the song Happy Birthday to You? You know, it's Happy Birthday to You, Happy Birthday to You. Well, evidently, it's been sung around the world and by many, many people. And there's now a proposed class action asking a federal court to declare the song to be in the public domain. Now, you might wonder, like, how could it possibly belong to somebody? Well, apparently, when it was first published, it was Warner Chappell Music, the music publishing arm of Warner Music Group. And evidently, they are getting licensing fees from various people who are singing versions of Happy Birthday to You. They say that they own a copyright to it. So I guess the question really is, I mean, do you think that it should belong? I mean, it's so universal. Should it belong to somebody? And should there have to be copyright?
No.
Fees?
Not at all. The song's great. I love it. It's a great song. There shouldn't be none of that. Andrew, what do you reckon?
Yeah, it's a really hard one. I mean, realistically, no. It shouldn't belong to. There shouldn't be fees, but in saying that, like everything, somebody obviously wrote it, they invented it, they first performed it, so because of its popularity, does that all of a sudden mean that they're not due their fees? And if they sold that license to Warner Brothers Music for $840 in 1931, or does that make it any different ethically to any commercial agreement today? So, you know, that my heart says no, it should be open, but commercially speaking, you know, somebody's bought it or sold it or has it licensed, so why is that any different to anything else?
Well, and I don't know whether this would make a difference or not, but originally when it was published in 1893, it was called Good Morning to All, and it was written by sisters Patty and Mildred Hill. The public, and I don't know who started it, but somebody started singing the words Happy Birthday to You soon after that. So really, it's not, we're not singing Good Morning to All, we're singing Happy Birthday to You. And so again, I don't know whether that would change your opinion, Andrew. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, well, if it was a song generated by Chinese whispers from one place to another, then you can certainly, you know, question whether or not any individual owns it. If it's just a mashup from a number of different people, at which point, you know, yeah, as I said, at which point probably it does change opinion a little. I know that Disney actually owned Happy Birthday for a number of years in the middle there, and it's always been one of those songs that I knew was owned by somebody, but similar to what sort of Brad said before, it's always for me been a question of how does someone own this, and does this mean that if someone sings Happy Birthday in a movie, they actually go and pay Warner Brothers money for, you know, to sing
yes.
that? It's kind
yes,
of
they
troubling.
Do. That's actually how this issue came about, is a company that was doing a documentary on Happy Birthday to You was basically given a bill for their licensing for it, and they said, but wait a minute, we've got, as part of this documentary, they had accumulated a great deal of evidence showing that it probably was in the public domain, and they refused to pay it, and that's basically why the company that prepared the documentary is now taking Warner to court over it.
Well, actually, I knew Happy Birthday was copyrighted, but it might actually be covered under fair use, which kind of covers if you use certain songs or media that is copyrighted or something like that. You're allowed to use it for news reporting, documentaries, parodies. So it might actually be covered under fair use, where sing it for somebody's birthday.
Here's part of the problem with fair use. Fair use in America is a fairly well understood concept. It's you know, it's enacted into law. Fair use is not a concept worldwide. So different countries have different, you know, ways to act on that and deal with it. And certainly there would be some countries where it is not, where it is copyrightable, or at least presumed copyrightable, and not usable under fair use. But even in a movie, in almost every case, a movie would be required to license it if it was copyrighted.
All right. Yeah, it depends how you use it, too, if you're making money off of it, but okay.
All right, Jake, what's your view on that story?
The Happy Birthday song? They should make it free for everybody to use.
I reckon they should do it as well. It's not
that
hard.
Kills it about...
It's not
that kills it.
It's not that hard to get either, you know.
Actually, Brad, we might have to delete that previous show that we sung Happy Birthday.
Never. Mm. Never. Never. Never.
Sorry, guys, I sent the check in.
All right, Jody, next story.
Okay, so there's an epidemic happening right now, and that is with cell phones being stolen. We have situations where people are walking down the street and somebody comes up behind them on a bicycle and grabs the cell phone right out of their hands. And part of the reason why it's epidemic is because when somebody gets a stolen cell phone, there's no barrier to having it turned over to another user. So what's happening is prosecutors across the U.S., and I don't know how you handle this in Australia, so I'm curious so you can share that as well. But what we're trying to do is make sure that smartphones would have a kill switch. In other words, if somebody stole the smartphone and they reported it stolen, then somebody wouldn't be able to grab that phone and use it again. I think it's insane that there is no way to track the phone currently, or they're just not doing it. But I'm curious. I think that you handle it better in Australia, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, we just don't carry our phones in around when we're walking. I don't anyway. Andrew, do you do that? What do you reckon?
I don't think that's... I'm not sure how we handle it better particularly, but I like the idea of this kill switch for phones, but I think it does sort of open a can of worms in a way, because what happens if somebody steals your, you know, password for your iTunes or whatever that manages this kill switch, all of a sudden this kill switch becomes something that can run people into trouble as well. You know, if someone steals your password and they want to get a couple hundred dollars off you, are they going to kill your phone? Can you then reopen it again? I really like the idea of it, but I think they need to put some solid thought around making sure that it doesn't have potential repercussions if it's misused. But I think it's definitely a fantastic idea. And long term, 1.6, half a percent of people in America have their phone stolen every year, which is a big statistic. That's 1 in 200 people, perhaps. I think it's something that has to happen. We have to do this, but we just need to make sure that we do it in the right way.
All right, Alan.
Well, and this may actually change the way that you're thinking about this. It has nothing to do with going in and logging in and using a password. What it has to do with, you call the carrier and say, my phone has been stolen. And then they enact the kill switch.
Well, there are a couple of different solutions to the problem. That's currently one of the ways that it's implemented today, is the carrier block list. One of the things that Apple has announced that's coming with iOS 7 is that they're going to have a kill switch tied to the phone and tied to your iTunes account. So you'll be able to kill it immediately if it's been stolen. And there are a lot of questions that are still up in the air about all of this, of course, and things are changing constantly. One of my concerns about this is that by essentially tying a phone to an account, which it sounds like the direction Apple is going and where a lot of people are urging the whole thing goes, Apple is now able to make sure that phones can't be resold as well as stolen. So, you know, there's now some question about, okay, is this Apple denying you access to your own device in some ways? And I think those are legitimate concerns. I think they can be addressed, and I hope they will be in short order.
Right. Well, I know with the biggest problem with iPhones being stolen, I'm sure there's other places as well, but in New York, I know it's been brought up quite a lot, and I think one of the district attorneys was the one that was really bringing it up, whereas these hardware manufacturers for these phones implement some kind of switch or something. Now, I don't know about Apple. I heard that they do have something for iOS. I don't necessarily think it may be a kill switch, but I heard they're going to make Find My iPhone or something like that where you can't erase it. It's tied to that particular phone, so you still be able to track it. Or I don't know, maybe you... Where you can't erase anything off the phone or something like that.
All right. Jacob, do you have a view on that?
Yeah, they should make a little something, but what if you accidentally say it when you still have the device? They should say, are you really sure? Then authenticate it.
Yeah.
I think they probably do. Easy.
Because there'll probably be ways people can find ways around it, you know. And then you got to think: is it going to inconvenience the user if they have to resell the phone, or something happens and it kills their phone inadvertently? So it's going to be really hard to implement it.
You can always put a pass lock on your phone too, so people can't get into it either. Andrew, do you carry your phone around when you're walking around?
I think we all do. I mean, my phone's on me all the time. But I accept that if my phone was to get stolen, I keep a backup and so forth. It's more important to me what's on the phone, the content, than the phone, the hardware itself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, Jody, next story. Good story, by the way.
The next story has to do with Foursquare. I don't know if you guys are still using Foursquare. I used it for a while, stopped because of, I just don't like the fact that people can tell exactly where you are or where you're going. But evidently, Foursquare is now charging businesses a $20 fee to register. And they recently raised, if you remember, $41 million in financing this year. But the investors are concerned because they don't see a really good way to monetize Facebook or Foursquare. So I'm curious if you guys, number one, if you use Foursquare, and number two, if you have a business, would you pay $20 to register with Foursquare?
No, don't use Foursquare. Andrew, would you pay $20?
I think $20 is a really nice number because it's something that isn't a lot of money. So I think people will do it. Companies will do it. But some may just not do it because everything social is free and they put their back up against it and say, you know, from a discipline perspective, $20 isn't a lot of money, but they may not want to do it. But there's also people who are sort of saying that there is a free alternative that if you wait for 30 days, then you can have a postcard, which might be some kind of lesser level of access. Would I pay $20 for a company? If it was active and I could see people were using it, then absolutely I would as a business. I might be a little bit dirty if it was something that I previously had for free and now they want to charge me. Me personally, being you know, having my own social startup myself, I'm really keen to have a look at how this goes for Foursquare because obviously monetization, physical monetization like this is something that I think a lot of companies would love to move into. It's why LinkedIn has such a massive valuation per capita on users because they're physically taking money off people instead of just through advertising. So I'm really keen to see if businesses do adopt and accept this. And if they do, I think it's going to be really positive for social and technology companies moving forward in the future.
Do you use Foursquare, Andrew? Do you use it at all? Do you use Foursquare?
I have used it in the past, but I'm really not very active on
that. No, I don't use it either. I reckon it's a waste of time. I use Highlight better. Steve, do you use Highlight? Foursquare? Sorry.
No, I don't use it at all. I think I did make an account, but besides that, I never used it. I do see, I don't know if it, I think most businesses, if it would really be useful to them, you know, $20 would be a drop in a bucket for them. But I mean, is Foursquare really, I mean, going to be used by businesses at all? Is it useful for them? Maybe if it is, then they.
I think a lot of restaurants and sort of entertainment places get value out of Foursquare, but other companies, I'm not too sure.
Mm. All right, what about you, Alan?
But if nobody's using it, it doesn't have any value.
Yep. All right, Alan, do you have a view on that story?
Not really. I used Foursquare for about 3 days. It became too much of a pain to deal with, so I gave it up.
Yeah, same. I agree. It's a waste of time. And Jacob, do you use Foursquare?
I used it for like 5 seconds and deleted my account.
All right. Okay, Jay, you don't use Foursquare, do you?
I used it for a little bit, but then I stopped.
All right.
Yes, everybody.
Yes.
Some of the investors were right.
Because there was so much hype about it. But I stopped using it for a couple reasons. One is because I don't like the idea that people know where you are all the time. And if you think about it, if you're advertising, hey, I'm over here, I'm over there, what you're doing is you're leaving your home, you know, susceptible. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. What I liked about it from a business standpoint is that if you're out and about and you're looking for a deal, it would notify you that there's something nearby, that there was a special, you know, or something that may be of interest. Shoes on sale over here, you know, free appetizer if you go there. And I did use it a few times to check in when I was out at a restaurant because the restaurant would have a special. But I guess I stopped using it again because I just felt that it was too invasive on my privacy.
Yeah, true. I agree. I don't use it. All right, next story.
This one's kind of cool. Groove. It's an app out of Canada, and apparently it's tearing up the charts. It reaching a top 10 spot in over 30 countries, climbing to number one in the Canadian App Store over other music apps, including Ardio and Songza. And it's part of a Montreal-based Founder Fuels or kind of like an offering. And right now it's gone free, and it's racked up over 85,000 downloads in just 24 hours.
Wow.
So, yeah, so just informational. If you guys are interested in checking out a new music app, it's kind of cool. And the last story really has to do with Facebook. You know, I mean, can't do a whole podcast without talking about Facebook.
Exactly. Yep.
evidently,
unfortunately.
Yeah, I know, right? Evidently, they just recently this week launched hashtags, and conjecture is that the hashtags make it now searchable, kind of like its own little search engine. So I'm just curious if you guys are going to be using Facebook hashtags.
Also, Jody, do you want to mention there's going to be an event on Thursday? Apparently, there's going to be a newsfeed added as well.
Yeah, they're talking about whether, because, you know, Google Reader died, they're talking about whether that's going to be what they're announcing, and it kind of seems like it would be, because mm-hmm. the invitation apparently that was mailed out, and unfortunately, I don't know how mine got lost in the mail. But
yeah, how did yours get lost in the mail? You should have went. You should go.
I don't know. It just never got here. But apparently the invitation was a snail mail printed invitation that said that a small team has been working on a big idea.
Wow.
Join us for coffee and learn about a new product. And it had a coffee ring printed on it.
It might be a new coffee app, maybe. Have you been to Facebook, Jody?
No, I have not.
Well, you should go. Yeah, I can't okay. wait. You should go. Sounds good. I don't use hashtags on Facebook. Andrew, do you use it?
Well, I'll actually probably stop using hashtags. No, look, I do use Facebook hashtags from time to time, only because my Facebook talks to my Twitter and so forth. So I think the hashtags kind of match up. But I think hashtags is just a next evolution. It's an obvious evolution of where, you know, people use them so readily on other networks. It was only a matter of time until they came to Facebook. And I've already seen just in the past 24, 48 hours, lots and lots of hashtags, obviously more than usual, and that's because it's fun and exciting now. But it will, you know, in the next few weeks, it will be interesting to see how they go, if people keep using them or whether or not it sort of plateaus out. But I don't think I'm really looking forward to seeing what's trending on Facebook. I think it might be a bit too much.
Yeah, I agree. What about you, Alan? What's your view on that story?
I find hashtags to be one of the biggest scourges on the internet today. I find them vile and repulsive. I have hated them ever since I first saw them. I find them difficult to use, an utter pain, and I find they clutter up conversation more than they improve it. That said, I suppose I could speak worse about them if I tried. That said, I think the Google Plus implementation of hashtags is finally beginning to get almost decent, but only beginning to and almost. And I think the way Facebook has done it isn't terrible, but it also isn't very good from what I've seen of it so far. It pops up this window completely. It's kind of this, it looks like it's kind of bolted on the side, which I suppose it is. It's not very comfortable. It's not very intuitive. And I have a feeling that you're eventually not going to see too many people on Facebook itself using it, except for tweets that are cross-posted between the two.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Jacob, what's your view?
Oh, the hashtags for Facebook?
Yeah.
I have never used a hashtag.
Really?
Mm-mm.
Why not?
Well, I've never tried to use one. Google Plus already does it automatically, so I don't really have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Steve, what about you?
Yeah, actually, I admit I'd never used hashtag either. I can see where they're kind of transitioning to use them on Facebook. It's interesting to note, though, even though we got over a billion, you know, people on Facebook, there's more and more, you know, kids that are actually starting to go from Facebook to Twitter, primarily because there's a lot of older people on there now, and they kind of get tired of Facebook. So I guess maybe that's one of the reasons why they kind of integrated the hashtag in there too, I guess. I don't know.
All right, good answer, Steve. Jody, any more stories, or is that the end of the news day?
That was the news for today.
That's a
great... I might just add quickly another story that's just come on the radar overnight, if that's okay, Brad.
Yeah, go ahead, mate.
Okay, Path appear to be on the path for new funding. They are looking to approach a $1 billion valuation. They're seeking between $75 to $100 million, which should push them into a $1 billion. Valuation, and investors are doing this on the back of a high growth period. So it's quite an interesting one. Path has been obviously around for quite some time, and this story is being discussed this morning in social networks. Chris Voss, actually, his biggest issue with it is that you can only have 150 people in your friends list on Path, which he feels and a lot of other people feel has actually stagnated their ability to grow users. Like, they only have 12 million users as a network, and they're looking for a $1 billion valuation. And this on the back of Google offering them $100 million as a buyout in 2011. So we may find that Path starts becoming really relevant again, particularly if they lift that user number, which I think they might on the back of this valuation.
Do you use Path, Andrew?
I do. I've been someone who uses it on and off ever since they started, almost the very start, and I really like it. I think as far as user experience is concerned, they probably have the best user experience on as a, from an app, you know, as an app perspective of any social platform. I'd love to see them do well.
What do you use Path for?
Just to communicate. Just obviously the 150 is the maximum number of users, but I just use it because I love the experience that you get with it, the actual user experience, the way everything works on it. It's really clean. It's a really comfortable platform. They had some problems in the past with people, you know, taking people's address books and storing them on servers potentially against their will, and they got an $800,000 fine for doing that from the FTC. All but I think in some ways they could become relevant in the near future.
All right, good story, mate. Joan, do you use Path just real quick and we'll get move on?
I used to use Path, and I just find it to be redundant, so I don't really use it that much.
All right, what about you, Jacob? Do you use Path? I know you do sometimes, but...
Yeah.
What?
I do.
You do, yeah.
Sometimes.
Okay. You don't use MessageMe anymore. What happened to that? That's one app we don't use anymore.
I know.
Why?
That's a good app. I don't know.
We should.
But
I should start using it. Should start using it more. I'm going to use it more. Steve, do you use Path?
No. I've heard about it, but if anybody wants to buy me out for $100 million, just give me a note, and you know.
All right. Good. Good one, Steve. Alan, what about you? Do you use Path?
Never used it.
Okay. All right. Andrew, the guest today.
We have Alan Furstenberg on the show from Prisoner.com. How are you, Alan?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
And tell us about Prisoner.com, Alan, and Google Glass and that sort of good stuff.
Well, Prisoner.com is my my playground site, basically. It's where I post all my experiments, post all the work that I'm doing, the apps that I've written for Google+, the apps that I've written for Google Glass. All of that stuff shows up there. It's basically where you can get links to me on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, the usual assortment of how do you find me. It's kind of my personal home base for stuff. As you mentioned, I do use Google Glass.
Mm-hmm.
I am a developer for it, and that's where I've been starting to post my experiments for Google Glass as well.
Nice one. And you also do a show with Dan McDermott, two shows each week, Google Plus Week and an Android show.
That's correct. We have a Friday night show that we call the longest running show on Google Plus, and it's because normally the show runs a good 3 hours every Friday night.
Yep.
That's Friday night on the East Coast of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Monday nights, East Coast U.S. time. We have a show called Our Android Week, which is a little bit shorter, but only a little bit.
That's good. Is the Google Plus Week, is that a higher rating show than that's the one on Twit?
I don't think we're quite as high as Twit, but we do get a pretty decent number of viewers every week.
That's good.
And we have excellent audience participation. One of the things I think we enjoy the most is that we bring in comments from our live YouTube viewers. People who are watching us live on YouTube or comments that will be coming on Google+, and we bring them right into the show and incorporate that as part of our discussion.
I really enjoy
that's one of the things we like the most about it.
Exactly, me too. I really enjoy when you get mad. That's with Craig Shipp. That's quite funny.
Craig and I have a number of disagreements, and I think it's always good to have a certain level of disagreement because it helps bring out the very different perspectives that we have.
Exactly.
And I think introducing people to different perspectives is an important part of any show.
All right. Jacob, any questions for Alan?
No. Not right now. Okay. Could you come back to me?
Okay. Steve?
Actually, I do. And your blog is a four-letter word. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. I've had... I run this blog called It's a Four-Letter Word, and... The way it works is that every entry has one or more four-letter words associated with it. And I will usually use these four-letter words to describe any number of things. So I could use the four-letter word as a launching point for a movie that I've seen, or to describe a historic event for that day, or just generally to talk about something on my mind, but it always centers around a four-letter word. And I think part of that is to a hobby that I've been kind of pursuing for years now on wordplay, just kind of restricting myself to a single theme and focusing on that word and then exploring how that word actually has different meanings. And in general, looking at how four-letter words have different connotations behind them. We always have very negative connotations behind four-letter words. They're curses. And instead, you know, we've got a lot of very, very rich, very expressive four-letter words that are not, and exploring some of those.
Sounds challenging, actually.
Well, it is challenging, but all good, you know, literature, and I certainly don't claim that this is good literature, all good poetry, all good songs, all good literature are challenging in some ways. They all constrain you, and it's a challenge to write within those constraints and see what comes out of it.
All right, Jody, any questions for Alan?
Yeah, why Prisoner?
Ah, Prisoner is a name that I got from the first bulletin board system that I was ever on. It assigned me the number 6, and a friend of mine, noticing this, commented, "Hey, you're the prisoner." I gave him this kind of strange look, and he introduced me to a BBC miniseries from the 60s known as The Prisoner, which focused around a lead character who was assigned the number 6. And the miniseries as a whole explores questions of power and privacy and technology and the role of a person in society and all sorts of other, you know, concepts along these lines, some of which were very near and dear to my heart. So when I adopted the name, and as I moved from system to system afterwards, I continued calling myself The Prisoner. And it's a name that stuck with me for these many years now.
Good name. There's also a show called The Prisoner. Did you know that, Alan? I probably told you
that. Somebody told me that recently, that, yeah, that there was an Australian show known as The Prisoner, which I did not know until
now.
Yeah,
That was me, actually. You were actually on Techluster. That's when I told you.
Is it based on the BBC version?
No, it's not. It's actually made in Australia. They've actually made a new series of it on Foxtel. It's really good. It's really good show. You should check it out. You've seen the show, have you, Andrew?
Yeah, of course. It was a 1980s sort of drama show. Obviously based, it was a half-hour show every night or once a week or something, and based around half a dozen female prisoners at a prison and the ups and downs that they had and so forth. So it was a very, very popular show in its day.
Yeah, and it's still, and there's a new version of it.
It still gets, you know, 2 a.m. reruns every night and things like that.
Really?
Yeah, The Prisoner.
What channel?
I wouldn't have a clue. I just know that my sister, I spoke to her probably, you know, some months ago about this, and she said she still watches it, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Actually, there's an American miniseries that was made based on The Prisoner.
Oh, yes, there was. I believe it was either AMC or A&E made it a few years back. Very, very loosely based on the original BBC show. Very loosely based.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this one might be different to what we have over here, I think. I'm not sure if it's the same one or not, but. All right. Any more questions for Alan, Andrew?
Yeah. You're one of the early Google Glass explorers. Just a couple of questions around that. Are you enjoying the Glass? Do you think it's going to be something that we get used to, and, you know, wearables as a whole? And the people sort of harassing you, do they come up to? They want to have a look and touch and feel and ask you questions and things. What have been your early experiences around that?
Well, first of all, I find it an incredible, incredible product. It's an incredible device. It has some very ambitious goals, and I think it's mostly hitting those goals perfectly. I do get a lot of people asking me about it or reacting to it, mostly positive, not entirely so, but mostly positive. And I think part of my role as an explorer is to help share that with people, to help people understand what its role is and what they should be concerned about, what they shouldn't be concerned about, more importantly, and just kind of get an understanding of what the device is and how it's used. That's part of my role as an explorer, and I kind of knew that it would be. And in doing so, I'm hoping, at least, that I'm helping ensure the success of this product.
Yep.
Well, how did you become a developer of Google Glass? Because, I mean, for the people to even try it, they got to, like, spend $1,200, go to California to pick them up. I mean, so how does the developer you know, how does it affect the developer? Because obviously you got to have Google Glass to see how it's going to work.
Yes. In fact, that's actually one of the requirements to be a developer is you actually have to have it. They don't give you access to the APIs unless you've picked up your Glass already. I got involved in the project last year at Google's developer conference in 2012 called I.O. And in the keynote address at I.O., some of you may remember, they had a bunch of people jumping out of a blimp above the Moscone Convention Center that we were at, wearing Google Glass. And you would see this first-person perspective of the skydivers jumping down, and then a bunch of people doing tricks on bikes, and then a person rappelling down the wall, and everybody eventually running into the keynote address where we were all sitting. That was impressive looking and kind of, you know, exciting. But, you know, that's a first-person camera. You know, we've seen that sort of thing before. I think what really started to sell me on it was some of the videos and some of the things they were talking about immediately afterwards as part of the keynote, where they talked about how it was really different. It was a personal device in a way that we've only begun to see personal devices so far. And certainly in using it since, I've come to appreciate just what a personal device really means. It's the sort of device that when you want it to be there, it's there. And you can rely on it being there. And when you don't need it or don't want it, it's out of the way. You don't have to worry about it. And that was the sort of thing they started introducing us to at I.O. last year. As part of that, they announced that people would be able to sign up for the developers program, the Explorer program, as they were calling it. And it would be limited to just those people at the conference itself. So about 2,000 people at the conference signed up for it, and I was one of the last to do so. I did so on the last day, literally on my way out the door. And we were told what the price was going to be, and we were told we weren't told about how we would get it, but we were told that it would be sometime in early 2013 we would learn more. And in early 2013, I was beginning to think about the price and think about whether I really wanted to do this or not. And they kind of, at that time, introduced what they were calling the Foundry project for it. So a smaller group of people would be invited to get a first crack at learning how to develop for it. And I signed up for that and was accepted. And I spent two days intensely learning how to do it and experimenting with the API in a hackathon environment. And at the end of that, I was sold on the fact that this was an incredible device. It was different than anything we had seen before. It was not the virtual reality that people thought it was. It was something new and different. And I wanted to be part of that.
All right. Good answer, Alan. That's great. That's a great, great thing there. Jody, any questions?
No, I was also curious about his experience, Alan, your experience with Glass. And, you know, do you think that this is something that's going to revolutionize the way we view the world?
Not exactly. It's not really a device that changes how we view the world, except in the fact that it lets us actually look at the world. We're no longer, you know, it kind of says you don't want to bury your face in a cell phone. You don't want to have to hide behind a camera lens and in the hope of catching the good picture. What you should be doing is being out there, living life, seeing what's around you, being part of what's around you, and still have the connection when and where you want it or need it. And that's, I think, the truly different thing about Glass compared to what we've seen in the past, is that it encourages you, in some ways it almost forces you, to live in the world that we're living in and be a part of that world. And I think that's really the revolutionary thing about it.
All right. Jacob, any questions?
One.
Go ahead, Al.
How do you like the Android app that comes with the Google Glass?
It does come with an app called My Glass, which basically helps you do some basic maintenance tasks. I tend to use the web version more than the Android version of it. And it does more or less the same thing. I don't use it very often. I don't need to. I think the biggest thing I use the Android app for is being able to show people what I see on my glass display at any given time. It has the ability to echo what glass is showing. And that's useful to help people understand what it does and how it works.
Okay.
Alan, how do you find yourself managing the content that comes through your glass? I've heard a lot of the explorers saying that they connect their Twitter up or their Google Plus and there's just a barrage of information. How do you find yourself just getting through that from the handful of people that you want or your family members?
Well, for starters, it's a great question, because information overload is something that I worry about a lot, and I've spent a lot of time managing. And fortunately, I think the Glass developers understand that and kind of understood where the hooks need to be and how to draw the correct line. I never hooked Twitter up because I knew that would be a fire hose for me, and I had no interest in getting that fire hose. I do get Google Plus notifications through it, but not all of the notifications come through. They filter that down a little bit, so that's good. Only my priority inbox for my Gmail comes into it. So instead of getting every single email, I only get the most important emails that show up. And I've limited who is able to send me text messages through it. So all of these things really mean that it's a notification for only the most important things to me. And even then, it makes it really easy for me to get this little chirp in my ear. I can take a quick glance and determine if this is a message that I really care about. It takes no more than 5 seconds, and I'm back on with my life. It's hardly an interruption. Certainly not the same kind of interruption that I get if I hear, you know, if my phone vibrates. I now need to pull the phone out. I need to unlock it. I need to look at who it is and see that it's worthless and, you know, go back and put it away. That's a much bigger interruption to my day, so I feel like Glass is a very, very tiny interruption, almost one that isn't there.
So, Alan, got a couple questions for you. One, do you wear it to bed? And two, how long does the battery last for and that sort of good stuff? And what sort of weird questions do you get asked? That was actually 3 questions.
I don't wear it to bed. There's not much point because my eyes are closed during that time.
That's a good point.
that's when I charge it, and it does need to charge.
Yeah, yeah.
My experience has been, and they say that it lasts, quote, about a day.
Okay.
And my experience has been is that, yes, if I'm doing normal stuff on it, and by normal I mean, you know, I get the usual round of notifications, I send an average number of messages out, I take several but not too many photos, and I take a video, you know, one or two videos, no more than 10 seconds each, it lasts about 8 hours.
Okay.
About a day. You know, it's when I start shooting videos longer than that. It's when I'm, you know, constantly shooting photos. That's when the battery life goes downhill fairly quickly. If I'm in a hangout, forget it.
What about videos in HD? What do they shoot? Recording 720p or 1080p or what?
The camera is 720p.
Okay.
And those are recorded and saved on Google Plus.
Nice one. What sort of questions do you get asked? Weird questions you get asked from people?
I think the best question, usually the way I introduce it to people and show it to people is that I'll ask to take their picture. And I think the reaction I've gotten a couple of times is, you mean you're not already taking my picture? and I'm not. You know, it's a very system that requires me to actively do something to take a picture or video. And usually after explaining this, I've heard one or two people then say to me, well, is there a way that you can go back and capture a picture that would have been there 5 or 10 seconds ago? And unfortunately, you can't. I mean, it's a neat feature. It's a neat idea. But it's not constantly running.
Right.
I think the coolest reaction I've gotten into it so far was I was on an airplane flight fairly recently and was wearing it on the flight, turned off because it's a computer, so you have to have it off until you're above 10,000 feet. And at one point I got up to stretch my legs, and a stewardess came over to me and said, they want to speak to you at the back of the cabin. So I walked back there. There were people in my way, but the lead flight attendant saw me and was gesturing me fairly urgently to come over. So I get there, and the first words out of his mouth is he points at it and goes, what is that? What does it do, and where can I get one?
That's cool.
And you know, I then spent half an hour explaining it to him. But that's the kind of reaction I've mostly gotten to it. Generally very positive, generally very inquisitive, and generally, once I explain it to them, people find it an awesome device.
Hey, Alan, do you let people wear it? Use it?
It has a demo mode. So I will sometimes put it into demo mode and let people who I know fairly well try it on.
Okay.
Because really, it's easy to explain it, and it's easy to see videos of it, but you don't really get it until you put it on. And it's really kind of a transformational experience when you put it on.
I reckon it'd be great when you're using it for when you're riding a bike or whatever, skateboarding, or that sort of good thing. I reckon it'd be great when you're recording a video. That'd be good. That'd be fun.
It's very good. When I was in San Francisco, I was riding the cable cars, and I had to hang on to the outside.
Yeah.
And it made it very easy for me to take pictures of what was going past and what was going on and still cling on to the edge of the cable car as we were moving.
That's way cool. Andrew, go ahead. Sorry, I meant to mention
it. Yeah, you said that you do a fair bit with the Mirror API. I've got a social video startup myself, and we were at some point looking to try and do some development through Mirror for the Google Glass, but we can't actually access Google Glass here in Australia. They're only releasing at the moment to US participants. How have you found working with the Mirror API? Is it something, because from what I've seen, it's a totally different kind of API. Is it something that you've picked up quite easily? Or
when they first announced it, they kind of teased at what it was. And once they teased it, I immediately understood what they were saying that it would do. And I was wrong on a couple of small points, but for the most part, I was correct about what it would do and how it would work. The REST API concepts are pretty well established. They're pretty well understood. They are certainly different than programming for an Android device or programming for iOS. Radically different, but for people who are familiar with web programming and web app programming, the concepts are very easy to understand. I find programming for Mirror, there are glitches, there are certainly bumps in the road, but I find it a joy to program for. I very much enjoy doing it. It's some of the most fun I've had programming in a long time.
All right, good stuff. We need to wrap this podcast up because it's been going on for like an hour now, and this gets replayed on Aussie Tech Heads on Thursday nights at, well, before 7 p.m. Before 7 p.m.-ish. Where can I get you at, Alan, when that's all good stuff and they can write to you?
People can find me at prisoner.com. You'll have links to my email there, links to how to find me on Google+, links to how to find me on Twitter, links to all the stuff I do. Just go to prisoner.com.
And I'll put that in the show notes. Andrew's final thoughts and that sort of, that sort of good stuff, you know?
Thank you for being on the show, Alan. We really appreciate your insight. And, be sure to tune in to Tech Webcast. If you want to get me, you can get me at zafo.com/@Andrew or Facebook and Twitter at Ari from Oz.
And me, you can get me at Twitter on Brad Oz and Tech Webcast. Also, I just want to say a big thank you to Craig. Shout out to Craig Ship. He actually bought me a new watch to review coming from Amazon. It was actually a Casio G-Shock. You know them, Andrew?
Yeah, I do. It's a great quality watch. So that's a fantastic little gesture there by Craig Ship, our friend from the Hangout 10 network. So be sure to check out some of his Google+ Hangouts there.
Yeah, definitely. Check out his show on Monday night, Hangout 10, hangout10.com. It's a show he does each week. Jody, final thoughts? Anything at all?
Well, I appreciate Alan coming on. You can find me on Twitter as Sunswept or the usual places as either Jody Rains or webmarcom.net.
All right. Steve, final thoughts or whatever?
Yeah, it was interesting on how the development for the Google Glass works. You can find me on Twitter at chatterbox_live.
And Jacob Jones, do you have anything to say before we go?
Yes, it's a good thing you didn't get the new one that had a breathalyzer in it.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Is that... Yeah, it's blue. It beeps at you. If you're over the limit, it'll start beeping at you and say, you can't go anywhere.
Is that true, Alan? Is that true what he's saying?
I saw a picture of it.
I've never used a with a breathalyzer in it.
The tube is so small, it can't fit in there.
All right. Okay, that's it. Good show.
Let me say where I am.
You just said that, mate. You already said it.
Jazzbot 326691Z.
And mention TechLuster.
At TechLuster.com.
That's a good
and
job.
At TechLuster Wednesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Who do we have on this week, Jacob?
Corey.
Corey from
Google.
That's it. She's a legend, that girl. She's appreciated her time. Last week we mucked up, so yeah, it's good that we sorted that out. So yeah, Andrew, do you want to say anything before we go? Is that it? Zafo.com.
Okay. Zafo.com. Check out my startup while we're plugging things.
Yeah, just plug it.
And we'll see you all next week.
Yeah, Zafo.com. It rocks.
Hi, Glenn from Aussie Tech Heads. Join Will, Eric and myself as we bring you the latest, most up-to-date, important tech news that affects you from Australia and the world. A weekly podcast available each Friday through iTunes. Watch the live stream recording of the show at live.thesecrethub.com each Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. or GMT plus 10. Call in live via Skype or chat in our lounge. However you get us, just make sure you do. Listen or visit our website for more information, www.aussietechhead.com.au. Aussie Tech Heads, Australia's longest running Tech News Podcast.
Well, that's it for Tech Webcast this week. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed having your mind expanded. Tune in next week for more Tech Talk with Brad, Jason, and whatever crazy guests they've managed to rope in. Don't forget to get the Tech Webcast app from iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast, and of course, check us out on Facebook too. Until next time, may the tech be with you. Peace!